Have you ever felt frustrated because you just couldn't find a lovely book to read? I can start to crave not just a good book, but a book that draws me in and evokes such a deep emotion that I can say, wow, that was a lovely book. Welcome, friends. This is Emmy B on Lovely Books Podcast, where it's my job to highlight the lovely books that keep you reading and connect you to the world. If you're new to Lovely Books, this podcast is more than just a best books podcast. It's about the reader's experience and takeaway. No book reviews, no analysis of literary content, just thoughts and personal anecdotes brought to our minds by the characters and subject matter that we love. That's what brings the book to life for you. I hope we give you something to think about, something to laugh about, and something lovely to read. Welcome, listeners. It's so great to have you here again for another episode of Lovely Books. We have an author interview today, which I'm really excited about. We have Caroline McBride here to discuss her new book, Four Seasons at Angelino's. But before we begin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I was born and raised in Orange County, California, where I grew up, and then I went to Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles for my undergraduate studies. While there, I won an ambassadorial scholarship, a Rotarian ambassadorial scholarship, to study international relations in Amsterdam. So I was living in Europe, and I think that's when I got the travel bug. I just saw how exciting it was to explore different cultures and places. I came back to LA, and I was briefly working as a political fundraiser before I moved back to New York City, or before I moved to New York City and became a nonprofit fundraiser. I was licensed and bonded. I focused on raising money for foster children. And at the time, I was involved in this great project called Artrageous, where we paired famous artists like Jeff Koons and Ross Bleckner with foster children, along with more privileged kids. We'd mix everybody up and have these wonderful art collaborations that later we would auction at a gala. And every year we raised over $1 million for the cause. So
wonderful.
It was great on so many levels, especially helping the children. And I spearheaded a mentor program that was, an offshoot of what we were doing at Artrageous. And it was so great to pair these kids up that unfortunately had tough backgrounds and tough childhoods, but they had so much potential. And to this day, I'm still in touch with some of them. And I'm
That's
so
great.
Happy that they made it, because you know it's tough if you don't have a strong family for anybody. It's really tough. And at the time, there were 26,000 foster kids in New York City. I don't know the number today, but those are the cases that were so bad that the government got involved and removed the children from their home and put them in foster care. So it's a cause that's close to my heart. And I referenced that, which we'll get to later in my book. I did make a reference to that situation, as far as children and new homes and new families and second chances. While in New York, I was involved in an online culinary startup, and which was exciting. We showcased the tips, tricks, and techniques of chefs across the city. We took the show, it was called Behind the Burner, to the Midwest. We went to Dallas and Los Angeles and Boston and different cities. And when I exited that company, I became a publicist for a famous restaurant group based in New York City called Serafina Restaurant Group. So Serafina is a chain of restaurants, Italian food. It's casual, it's warm, it's inviting, and it's also a huge attraction for celebrity clientele. So we'd have everybody from actors, actresses, performers, politicians, athletes. They all go to Serafina in New York City. And while I was there, we had a huge international expansion, and we're still having it. Our last foreign location was in Israel before the pandemic. And so the restaurant group expanded around the world, and I went with it to help with branding and marketing and general public relations duties. And with the company, I was able to go to places like Brazil and Dubai, India, Turkey. And I decided to take these elements of the things that I learned and incorporate it into a book that was inspired by my experiences. But then, of course, the book is romantic comedy, so it becomes highly fictionalized. People ask me this all the time, how much of this happened and how much of this was you and your experiences? And I assure people, the romances are highly fictionalized. It's definitely fiction, so I guarantee you that. However, the characters, especially on the work sense, it's a composite of my career in the restaurant industry. In addition to Serafina, I've consulted for hotels in hospitality, and also for a beauty brand named Decorte, which is huge in Asia. I helped launch them in North America and England. So I have a lot of real life work experiences that I incorporate, but I mix and mash it to protect the innocent and incorporate it into the story.
So I imagine that this was just an absolute riot to write. It was probably so fun to write. So with what you've experienced in the restaurant industry, I'm sure you had just a lot of material. But that being said, you're in the middle of this incredible career, and it had to have been frightening for you to sort of shift your energy, take it away from what you were doing, and write this book.
It was, you know, it was actually exciting and fun because I just had this within me. And unfortunately, I lost the love of my life a few years ago, but he was very inspirational. Him and I were both book enthusiasts, and we'd go to different bookstores in different cities, and we spoke of literature very often. And at the same time, I think I was torturing him with some of my work stories. And, you know, he's like, you got to write some of this down. And I was like, yeah, writing sounds good. And I had a few different ideas of which direction to take it. And ultimately, I came up with Four Seasons at Angelino's. And I said, you know, I've been a restaurant publicist for 10 years. Why not incorporate some of these wild adventures into a book and share them with other people so they could have hopefully a few good laughs, learn about the restaurant industry, and also take a trip around the world, because each chapter is named after a different city. So I only write about places that I have been to, cities that I've been to, restaurants, hotels, parks, anything in the book, I have actually physically stepped foot in there. And I hope that I can give people insight, because some of these locations they might not have traveled to.
Well, I'm somebody who absolutely loves to travel. And I think that's so cool, because it's almost like a travel journal. I mean, readers can actually visit the locations and the restaurants, stay in the hotels that are described in the story.
Absolutely. That is my hope. And while you'll see some very high-end, like Alain Ducasse and Paris, you'll also see down-to-earth places like in Newport Beach, there's Spaghetti Factory, and it's just a fun family restaurant. And also, one of my favorite places is a 24-hour diner on Sunset Boulevard called Mel's. And so there's a little innocent milkshake theme throughout the story, and Mel's is referenced. So I feel like there's something for everyone. They want to go five star, or just, you know, throw on a pair of jeans and be casual. You can find places in the book.
That's great. So shifting gears just a little bit, you kind of have a lot in common with the main character in the book. So how much of the protagonist Charlotte's story actually comes from you?
Yeah, that's the question I get a lot. I would say about 70%.
So this, it's such a fun story. It's a wild ride. It's a fun story. There's a lot of things happening, but was it hard for you to let Charlotte make decisions that you wouldn't make? Or, I mean, was that just part of the fun?
It is tough, because people will say, for example, they say, I didn't realize you're such a martini drinker. I'm like, no, actually I'm not. I'm not a big drinker at all. And if you read the book, you'll find that Charlotte McPherson makes really bad decisions when she has too much to drink. So I tried to incorporate some life lessons into this book. And the whole idea, it's four seasons, it takes place in a year, is for her to learn and grow. In the beginning, she realizes that she's 35 and she hasn't focused on family because she's given everything to her career. And, she finds out something horrible about her boyfriend in the very beginning. And she sets off on this journey. She says, I'm going to take a year to find Mr. Right. And as a result, she jumps headfirst into relationships that really aren't the best ones to be in. But she's so eager to get that family that she had neglected. And in the meantime, there is somebody special who comes from Utah. That's one of the reasons why I was so excited to talk to you today. And he's very elusive, and we don't know what's going on with Wyatt Ashcroft. Like, he keeps her in the friend zone, but he's the most stable guy. He seems unstable because he's in and out and he's so devoted to his career, but he's a pretty good guy. And so, so while she's going out with the wrong guys, he's sort of in the background, and the reader is left wondering, like, okay, can she pull it together and make things happen with Wyatt, or is she going to keep jumping into relationships with the wrong men?
So this theme of finding more to life than just, you know, financial freedom and fun, is that a value that you instilled into this character because it's something that you also value? Has, you know, looking for something greater been something that has been a driving force for you in your life?
Absolutely. I value family. I'm very close to my family. I'm very blessed to have them. And I find that, but we get, especially after living in New York for so many years, we can get really lost in the rat race. You know, they say things can happen in a New York minute, and it's true. You go there, you network, you could walk down the street and meet somebody that changes your life in a career sense, or I guess in a romantic sense too. But what happens in a New York minute is you wake up and you realize that minute has been 5 years, and the time just goes by so fast. I have a friend, he's in his late 40s, and he told me that in New York, he said, I don't have to settle down because it's like Disneyland for adults. Yeah. He said, any other part in the country, he's like, all my other friends from college, they're all settled down. He's like, but in New York, I can go out every night, and that's what he wants to do. But other people do want to settle down and have a family. And sometimes you can wake up, or at least many of my single friends in New York, and say, okay, wait, now let me reprioritize. Right. But a lot of the men who have those priorities might already be taken. So we have this theme in the book where Charlotte, she goes to a matchmaker. She tries online dating. And these are all things that women, single women, career women in New York and other cities are doing. So I hope that her character is relatable. And she's a bit of a, I will admit, she's a bit of a train wreck. I mean, that's what makes her amusing to watch, because you're wondering, will she pull it together? And with each season, with each man, there's a different man in every season, she'll learn a lesson. Like, one man is divorced. He tells her, I don't want to have more kids, but she thinks she can change him. Ultimately, the lesson is, if a man tells you what he wants, listen to him, because you probably aren't going to be able to change him. Right. And, you know, she has the rebound relationship, which a lot of women could relate to, with the bad boy, and, you know, kind of falls for somebody who's a little bit, shall we say, arrogant, but he's a sweet talker. So she's learning along the way.
So I did actually appreciate Charlotte as a flawed character. Well, and often it was situationally hilarious. Her flaws humanize her. Clearly, like, we're not always our best thinking selves. But watching her make dumb decisions was part of the fun. And what about her love interest, Wyatt? What a flawed and endearing character. I often found myself like, Wyatt, what the heck? Hello.
The last minute invitations, which, you know, some men do. It's funny you should mention that. A friend of mine in New York texted me and he's like, I'm on page, I don't remember the exact page, like 275, and I'm really upset. And so I look and I'm like, oh yeah, she has to work, so she can't meet Wyatt. And he's so incensed. He's like, well, she should go meet him because her bosses don't value her. And I'm like, Well, Wyatt shouldn't ask her the day before a big event to be in LA. And so it was just kind of funny because he started defending Wyatt. And I'm like, I wonder if this is hitting close to home for him. You know, maybe he's one of those men who asks last minute, doesn't realize that women, you know, we have schedules, we need to arrange things. So I hope that these characters can resonate in one way or another. And I was very careful. I didn't want to vilify all the men and make them, you know, horrible jerks. Sometimes relationships just don't work out between two people. They don't, you know, it doesn't mean either person is bad. It's just not meant to be. But you still can have an interaction with somebody and maybe a short-lived romance or even just a human connection with no romance. But there's something there. There's some sort of spark. And I think the more people we encounter, the more we experience different kinds of relationships with them.
Well, yeah. And I mean, in this novel, there's so many different cultures and those cultures make characters stand out because they're exhibiting or they're not exhibiting different cultural standards.
Yes. Yes. You know, she has a great relationship with a Frenchman and you know, he's talking about World Cup and soccer and she's like, you know, trying to relate because anybody who's been to Europe, you know, it's so big, so much bigger there than here. I mean, US, it catches on, especially during World Cup, but it's like, it's, you know, like a religion over there. Yeah. So just these different cultural experiences or being in Japan and being in a society where there's no catcalling or whistling at women. The Japanese men are very proper and just kind of taken aback because she feels visible in that scene. Ultimately, each culture that she comes in contact with, she does have a warmth in her heart for that culture. When she's leaving Japan, she's actually sad and tearing up because, you know, as has been my experience when I would go and open these restaurants in other parts of the world, it's like you have this experience and this teamwork and then it all comes to an end. It's like, bye. It's kind of like that last day of high school in a smaller, shorter time period or the last day of college or what it may be. It's just, it's time to say goodbye. But the nice thing is that she learns something from each culture and from each relationship.
And that's so valuable. So when you set out to write this novel, is Four Seasons at Angelino's the book you always intended to write? Or did the story go through any sort of transformation from beginning to end?
I knew I wanted to write romantic comedy because by definition, there's a happy ending. And one of the points of this book is escapism. There is absolutely no politics whatsoever. There's light religious references because I personally am very religious, but I find that most people I come in contact with have some sort of faith. It could be Christian, Buddhist, Jewish, Muslim, whatever it may be. So that's real life. When you meet people, many of them were brought up in a religion and many of them still have religious faith. So there's light references, but I wanted people to just read this and feel like they'd been on a trip and not think about our current political climate or anything too confrontational. And that is why romantic comedy made sense to me. I also really wanted to showcase different cities. Ultimately, this book is a love letter to different cities. And I figured I organized my thoughts a certain way that four seasons means four different sections of the book. She gives herself a year and you have snow in the beginning and snow in the end. I mean, anybody who's spent time in New York, great city, not great weather. Yeah. So that plays a role too, the sweltering hot summers. New York is a city that comes and it reoccurs in the book because that's where Charlotte lives. And then also LA because she has family there. She went to undergraduate there. And so, yeah, I set out to write something that would entice people and intrigue people. But I also took, as far as coming up with the story, I wanted it to be a restaurant publicist who's having this like personal crisis. And I took a composite of different chefs, for example, I've met along the way. There's Chef Lorenzo in the book and he's somebody who's very intense about cuisine and food where she's just like, yeah, it tastes good. I wanted to have Jack Goodman as the level-headed CEO. And I just think about different people I've worked with and interacted with. The director of human resources, by definition, they have to, they're the rule enforcer in different companies. So of course I had to have a woman who was enforcing the rules, and people don't want to listen or they're kind of scared of her. And I took these real life positions in companies, especially with the restaurant industry. You have the hot bartender who's flirting with all the clients, and, you know, that's real life. So often you have that good looking bartender, man or woman. I also really wanted to give a glimpse of the restaurant industry, because we go out to eat, we spend some of our most precious moments at a restaurant. It could be a birthday dinner, a first date, or just getting together with a friend at a restaurant. We don't realize what goes on to get that risotto to your table, or the cocktail, or even iced tea, whatever it may be. There's a lot going on behind the scenes, and with it are romances. I mean, you have the back in the kitchen, you have your dishwasher, your chefs, your cooks. In the front of the house, you have your waiters, waitresses, bartenders, hostess, maitre d', sommelier. And within this group of people, there's romances. And also within the customer group, you have, I've seen it where there's men, and I'm trying to think, perhaps women, I'd have to think about that, where they want to sit in a certain section of the restaurant to be served by waitress that they have a crush on, but they're too shy to say. And so I wanted to give a glimpse of what is really happening when you go out to eat and you think you're just there to have a nice meal with your friend, but there's a lot going on around us that we don't see.
Well, one of the great and unique things about this book is the setting. If there are a lot of books set in this type of atmosphere, none of them are coming to my mind. But you know, my husband considers being a busboy a rite of passage. And my older sister spent years in the food industry, and it really is a very likely setting for romance.
It's real life. I am telling you, it is definitely real life. And what also is exciting within restaurants is that it's a lot of often young people or single people, so who are working late hours. Sometimes, especially in New York, you don't get out of there till midnight or 1 a.m. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And then I focus on the office side, the behind the scenes, because Charlotte McPherson is the publicist, but she also has the accountant in the office she doesn't get along with, he's mean, and then the course director of human resources. So you see that while she might have a glamorous meal with a journalist inside the restaurant, then she's back in her cubicle during the rest of her day, and you have the office politics also happening in the story.
Well, and there were some pretty dynamic extremes here, and I loved that sort of contrast.
Right? Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wish I could say that it was all exaggerated, but it wasn't. I have seen, you'd be surprised. It's just a cast of characters. I think that, you know, in New York, you have banking and you have certain industries, law firms that are very serious and professional, but sometimes behind the scenes with restaurants, you'll see it all.
Well, I read that you are working on another book.
I am. I am writing the sequel to Four Seasons at Angelino's, because when we have at the end of rom-coms that happily ever after, you walk away thinking that feels good. But in the sequel, we see the next morning she wakes up, you know, and then what? You know, she thinks she gets her happily ever after without ruining the ending. You know, she thinks everything's going to be roses and peaches, but then again, it's real life. And let's see how relationships take work. And of course, with the sequel, I have an entirely new group of cities, which is really exciting to me, because I wanted to include Mexico City, for example. Latin America wasn't represented in the first book. Dubai is in the second book. Wanted to add the Middle East. And so it's exciting. And in the U.S., Boston. In fact, Park City. We were just talking about Utah. So Park City is in the second book, and along with Philadelphia and Boston and Chicago. So yeah.
Yeah. Keep Park City on the map. So of all these different cities, you've clearly traveled so much. Do you have a place that's your absolute favorite?
I will say every city means something different to me. And so like Moscow, I mean, just the history of being in Red Square, or Mumbai. I mean, again, there's such a deep history. But my favorite place in Four Seasons at Angelino's, as far as a romantic destination, is a chapter. It's called Cap Estelle, and it's in the south of France. And not too many people know about it, but I've been talking nonstop about it. And it's in the book. It's beautiful, and it's a state that they converted into a hotel. And I believe during certain times of the year, the family who owns it, they do use it as a home. But a beautiful infinity pool, private beach, restaurant, at least two restaurants on the premises. Absolutely beautiful. And I feel blessed that I was able to go there. I only went there once. I hope to get back there. But it's very special. You look out, you see Monaco is right across the water. And it's so nice. I love the entire south of France. If you can rent a car and just drive and experience it, it's one of my favorite places in the world. But Cap Estelle is kind of a secret place that I included in the book.
You know, I love that there is so much besides just a fun rom-com to this book. So what is it that you hope readers can take away, if you could just sum up for us from this novel?
I hope they can travel vicariously. Because during this pandemic, I know that so many travel plans have been ruined. And so I hope they can just travel and feel free and feel that they're in a different environment.
Oh my goodness. And aren't we just all still feeling so cooped up? That's exactly what we all need. So Caroline, how can listeners connect with you on your journey as you keep writing? And we'll be watching for your second book coming out. What's the best way for our listeners to connect with you?
Absolutely. Speaking of a journey, I included a travel blog on my website. So,
well, that's really exciting.
Yes. Well, every city in the book is getting an entry on my travel blog, and it includes the overall vibe of the city, the dating scene, and restaurant recommendations, as well as certain attractions to visit. So Mumbai, for example, is in the book, but then you go on the travel blog and there's stuff that I couldn't include in the book because of space issues and all sorts of restaurant recommendations and attractions to visit. That is all on my website, which is carolinemcbride.com. It's just my first name and last name, carolinemcbride.com. And I'm on Instagram at McBride Books. And Facebook also is McBride Books, and Twitter is just Caroline_Alexa. And I hope to connect with as many readers as possible. Also on my website, if anybody wants to send me a message, there's a place to do that also.
Well, as I've said before, I absolutely love doing author interviews. I feel like when you actually get to hear the context of what the author was thinking when they were writing the book, and you have that alongside with your own context for what you were experiencing when you read the book, it just kind of broadens your understanding and kind of opens your mind to different possibilities for what you can learn from the book and different ways that you can engage with the story that you just read, kind of like going to a museum and having an artist explain to you what he was experiencing when he painted the picture.
I absolutely agree. And thank you so much for mentioning that. It's true.
Well, I've had an absolutely lovely time interviewing you.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And what makes it even better is that I'm teaming up with Caroline to give away two copies of her book. So if you want to enter this giveaway and enjoyed what you heard here today, please hop over to either one of our Instagram pages, lovelybooks_podcast or McBride Books on Instagram, and enter the giveaway. You have until this next coming Friday. I will announce the winner in my stories. If you like what you heard today, please remember to comment, like, subscribe, and leave us a review. This has been such a great episode, and I'm excited to join you again next week as we bring you another lovely book.